in here. Okay, does that sound good? Okay, all righty. And does someone need these? Okay. If they're okay, I can just put them right down here. Okay, all righty. Okay. Hello, I'm Mars, and I am a grateful recovered alcoholic. I did make some notes, however. Mike, Railroad Mike, where'd he go? Oh, right there. Colfax, Washington was my first home group. Mike's been there forever. And he was there when I was asked for the first time to share my story. And I've only shared it live to people twice or three times, and it was all three times at Colfax when there was maybe at the most 25 people in the room, maybe 15, I don't know. But anyway, since online meetings, and I do refer to them as online meetings because they are AA meetings, and whether or not you've had a bad experience, if you tried to go to an online meeting when they first kind of exploded, they were definitely going on before COVID started. I know people that were doing them for years before, as soon as the internet, even like by Skype or whatever. But of course, when COVID closed our rooms and then we basically didn't have a choice, then they just exploded, and thank God for that. So anyway, that first time that I was asked to speak in Colfax, I think I had 12 pages, you know, this size, you know, typed and single-spaced, and everybody was like, she's not really going to read all that, and I did. So I don't have 12 pages typed, but I made bullet points, and really, I love how Carol Worth just says, you just let her rip. You know, you pray and you let her rip. And not quite there yet, but I just want to start first. Well, first I got to take a sip. Mouth gets so dry. I want to just start with a prayer, so if you will indulge me. Thank you, God. Thank you for this second chance at life because of the gift of sobriety. Thank you for Alcoholics Anonymous and for every person in this room, whether decades sober or hours sober. Please help me share honestly, directly, and not waste words. Thy will be done, not mine. Amen. Thank you. So the second, besides thanking God, I want to thank the committee. I am so humbled to have been asked. And so if you're just really disappointed after me, stick around, because much better is coming. And of course, I thought I should give my time to Dennis, because wouldn't you like to hear more from Dennis and Keely? But anyway, take it up with them if but I am so honored, and it's because I truly do have such a thankful heart for, and so many of you I know. I mean, there's a lot of people that I haven't met, but so many of you that I know and that I love so much. And the online meetings are a big part of me getting to know more Spokane people. I live in St. John, Washington, an hour and a half south of here, and I'm in the middle of wheat fields, literally, live 3 miles out of town. So from my very first meeting was in Spokane, and because I wasn't going to, I knew there was a meeting in Colfax, which was a lot closer. I lived in Endicott at the time, but there was no way I was going to go to Colfax because the church is on Main Street, the front door is on Main Street, and, you know, there's no way I was going to go to that. So I, well, I'll back up just a little bit. I called the 24-hour hotline that, you know, is in our office in the Lano Club. And backing up, it was, I came in at age 45, and I'm now 65. And May 22nd of this year, if I am still here, I don't ever say God willing, I'll turn 20 years, or God willing, I'll have this AA birthday. I know it's God's will, but whether I'm actually here, that is up to God. But anyway, I look forward to celebrating 20 years. But it is just with a thankful heart, because I've corrected myself. I used to say, you know, I got sober on that date, or, you know, when I got sober. And I'm just totally convinced, and I just believe it to my soul, is that it was a gift. And I just, it breaks my heart for so many people that that don't ever get the gift of desperation and of willingness. And that's how I came to you, was that I was at the end of myself. But I do want to finish thanking the committee, and those of you that have never been involved in the committee, because a couple years ago I did just a little bit, not much, but it was like on the flyer, and just a very little bit. Oh, and I was a host for Biddy Clark from Idaho when she came that year. So just a tiny little bit I was involved, but just knowing the amount, or having an inkling of the amount of work that goes into this, and a year in advance of their meetings weekly, or monthly, excuse me, and just, you know, everybody has jobs, and they all just work so well together. And this is Nicole's first year as chairman, and so thank you so much. I got to visit Nicole last night at the dinner, and I was just tickled to do that, because talking about the Facebook pages, I know I go all over the place, but the sober Facebook pages, one of them that I know some of your faces from, but I don't know your name, is because we're on that Sisters in Sobriety page. And so, you know, and then I'm Marcelina Cisneros Clements, so that's a mouthful, but Mars is what, you know, what I go by. But anyway, that's one of the pages that I post our online meeting flyer every week. And you know, I got to thinking too about that question that someone asked about posting, would I post my, or what do I think about posting my medallion or my coin? And I love to wish people happy birthday and to celebrate their sobriety, and I love to make little flyers, and I post that on, because I know that that's where they are and their friends, and it's like, so-and-so's turning three today or whatever. But because that, in my mind, that's we're not to be anonymous among ourselves, and I love to celebrate other people's sobriety. So anyway, but I, on my own Facebook page, I don't do that. Take a drink here. And in addition to the committee, I just want to thank my girls. And, you know, I love so many of you that aren't, you know, that I'm not sponsoring, but my sponsees, I have three sponsees here. And I hope I'm not forgetting someone. No, I've got three. But I also have some women that I'm not your sponsor, but you're my girls. And I just, you know, I'm your cheerleader and just love you so much. And you know, I don't want to cry up here, so that's another reason why I have the notes. Is like, okay, instead of getting choked up, I'm gonna follow this right now. I know. What I was like. My dad was in the military. He was in the Air Force for 14 years, or 15 years, and then he went into civil service. So we moved around a lot, and I had four younger brothers, and was responsible for them a lot. When I was 10, we had a babysitter. They went out a lot on the weekends. The weekends, they went out Friday and Saturday night, and would drink quite a bit. And anyway, so we always had babysitters. And when I was 10, and my brothers are all younger than me, I don't know how old she was, maybe 15 or 16, but I had a baby, you know, my youngest brother was an infant, and she dropped him. And I was right there, and I freaked out and sent her home. Yeah, I said, don't ever come back here again. I don't know, my brother, you know, anyway, I was so upset. So when my parents got home, they're like, where's the babysitter? And I said, she dropped Tony, but I think he's okay. And he was, thank God. But anyway, so they never had a babysitter. Because I told them, I said, I will watch my brothers. And I was 8 when the third one was born, and I was 10 when Tony was born. So anyway, from then on, I had responsibility for my brothers on the weekends. Because they drank a lot, my dad he was very, very jealous, and you know, when he drank, he'd just get insanely jealous. And anyway, there was just some they would get into fights, and my dad would get violent, and a lot of times it was chaotic. I I'd be looking at the clock because I'd never go to sleep until they got home, and be looking at the clock and just waiting for that, you know, to the sound of the car. And then I'd never know, you know, if it was going to be, like, really, really awful or, well, anyway, sometimes I'd have to call the police or run next door. Anyway, that was just how it was for then at that time. But we also, my mom was raised Lutheran, and she brought us up going to church every single Sunday and Sunday school, and then we were, that was just a part of our life. And when I got to 7th and 8th grade, I went to confirmation, and I loved it. We happened to have a great youth group pastor at that time, and he was just vibrant and positive, and I just loved it all. And then through that time, 7th and 8th grade, like I said, I loved everything about church too, but it became personal for me, and I got involved with some kids at school that had a Bible study, and so, of course, they were called the Jesus Freaks, and I was just like, you know, whatever, that began to be my identity, but I was happy with it. And so anyway, summer vacation, we went to Oregon, which is where my my parents were both from, but because we always moved around when we went to went home for vacation, it was to Oregon. And it was just between my eighth grade and ninth grade year, my wild and crazy cousin said, we're going to go out and go to a drive-in movie and with some guys, with some boys. And anyway, so and she didn't even say anything about drinking, even though it had been a part of her life for a while. But we went to a drive-in movie, picked up these guys, and strawberry, Boone's Farm strawberry wine. I know when anybody mentions that, when I'm hearing, it's like, yep. Those of us from this certain vintage, you know, that was a mid-70s, right? So anyway, I'm in the back seat with this guy, and I had never had, other than communion, you know, I had never had anything. And they had Tupperware used to make, I swear it was that tall. They used to make these cups that tall, and filled it up and handed it to me. And my experience was not like a lot of yours, that it was great and you loved it and you found your release and all that. No, it was just like, oh, okay. And I pretty much drank it quickly, and to me it tasted kind of like Kool-Aid, except sour Kool-Aid. But anyway, I didn't have any affection for what I was tasting, but it was just kind of like, I'm in this weird situation, uncomfortable, and this guy he sounded cute on the phone, but he's not. And anyway, so then when I thought, well, I have to go to the bathroom, and so Cindy got out of the car, and when I went to open the door, my legs just could not heartily walk. But what's weird is that I wasn't feeling, I mean, I was feeling kind of like that, but not, you know, not in a good way. And anyway, hardly got to the bathroom, and the whole, you know, the floors were just like this. And it was just a horrible experience. Horrible. And consequently, I didn't have any desire to drink again for, I don't know, I think I was 20 or 21. But so I went all through high school, and my friends were, because then that was in Oregon on vacation. So then when I went back to where I lived, with my church friends and my Bible study group and all that, it's like, it was just kind of like, I think I maybe told one person, you know, that I drank and got so sick and so on. But anyway, when, you know, the cool kids were partying and talking about, you know, what party they're going to go to, then it was like, that's not for me. And I wasn't, yeah, I was happy where I was, and doing Bible study on a Saturday night. But we had fun. You know, I loved my friends and loved God. And so that's just where I was. So anyway, after when I was in my senior year then, I knew that I wanted to travel. Oh, I should just back up just a tiny bit, because I don't want you thinking that my the turmoil at home was like that through, you know, all through until I left home. We lived in Phoenix at that time, and then we moved to Sierra Vista, which is south of Tucson, for my my high school years. And when we moved, my dad got involved in the church. He started coming to church with us, and got involved, became friends with some guys, and it really, really changed his life. And, you know, it wasn't church, it was God that changed his life, but it made a tremendous, tremendous difference in our life as a family, because then instead of, you know, them going out and partying, they still drank, but it wasn't that horrible cycle of, you know, not knowing how things were going to be when they got home. Instead, they had a great group of friends that weren't into partying. So, so anyway, my senior year, I knew I wanted to travel, and I did want to go to college someday, but I wanted to travel. And I heard about this organization that was patterned after the Peace Corps. See, that's why I have some notes. It was patterned after the Peace Corps, but it was started by a Christian guy who wanted to be able to give this opportunity to anyone who wanted to go serve, work for 2.5 years. It was a 2.5 year commitment, and you would need to raise your own financial support through friends and family and talking to churches. And it was called the Christian Service Corps. And so the more I looked into it, it was like, oh my gosh, they've got, and now at this point, I'm just still senior in high school. And it's like, because they took people, like doctors that wanted to take a year or two off, or nurses or teachers, and I'm like, as far as skills go, I can type, I can answer a phone. I think I worked in our school office, and I loved being able to feel like I could, you know, be kind of grown up and answer the phone and all that. Anyway, I said I could be a secretary. So I was like, okay, if you raise your own financial support, and then you will give you some places in the world that are looking for a secretary. And anyway, then their training was in Washington, D.C. for 3 months, and you went to that, and then you went wherever you had chosen to go, that if they wanted you, and two different places said right away that they'd like a 18-year-old that was excited about life and traveling and God, and you know, yeah, you can come be our secretary. So anyway, São Paulo, Brazil is where I chose to go. And it was just like, oh my gosh, this will be so great. I get to go live somewhere, you know, totally different and all that. So in the meantime, my folks moved to Germany, and my financial support wasn't coming in the way, because you got to have your financial support was supposed to be, people were supposed to pledge, or churches to pledge to support you, like $100 a month for 2.5 years. So of course that's, you know, wasn't real easy to do, but then sometimes people would just give a one-time gift. Anyway, went to Germany, talked to some of the churches there in the American military community, and then I went to Brazil, and I was supposed to be there for 2 years, and I was working in a Christian publishing office, and everyone was Brazilian, so spoke Portuguese, and I took Portuguese while I was there, and because I was surrounded by it, I picked it up pretty quick, and I was taking like 3 lessons a week, but anyway, loved it. But then I was there for a couple months, I was supposed to be there for 2 years, and Brazil changed their visa laws for tourist visas, which I was there on a tourist visa. Anyway, it was impossible that I could stay longer than 6 months. But in the meantime, I'd met up with a guy, a German guy. Who worked for an international, it's Youth for Christ. I don't know if any of you have heard of that. But anyway, he said, hey, if you need to you need to relocate, and you know, you've got this financial support, our international office is in Geneva, Switzerland, and I need a secretary for an international conference that we have coming up. And we work a year ahead of it, and you would be corresponding with all of our leaders around. We had 167 different countries. And so I was like, oh, that would be awesome. I would love to live in Geneva, Switzerland. And at the time, my family was living in Frankfurt. And so the idea of being closer to them, you know, I loved. So anyway, I went back to Washington, D.C. for 3 months and then went to Geneva and was working for Youth for Christ there. And still, up until that point, not even around people who drank. So it just wasn't, you know, wasn't an issue. When I got to Geneva, it was a different story. You know, when like everybody has wine at lunch and it just was like kind of, 'cause I've never been in a Christian group or church that was anti-drinking, or like, you know, you can't drink, but certainly, you know, it's well, anyway, in Europe, it was different, and I mean, the church that I started going to, they had a singles group, and it was party time, and so anyway, the allure and the kind of like, I don't know, kind of felt like being a little sophisticated or whatever. So I started drinking wine and liked it. And anyway, I was telling Dennis this. It was 1980, and year of the, well, it was 79, because it was the election, 1980, that was going to be my first election that I got to vote in. And so I wanted to register to vote, and I had to go to the American consulate to do that, living in Geneva. And at that time, it doesn't matter. Anyway, our Marines, U.S. Marines, were at the consulates and embassies, you know, doing security duty. And at that time, we had the 40, 42 American hostages in Iran that were being held. And so the security was really tight around our embassies around the world. So anyway, I left my Youth for Christ office, and to my girlfriend said, because I had heard that at that consulate, there was like 40 Marines there. And you're talking about young, nice looking Marine. So anyway, I said, I'm going to go get myself a Marine. And I did. Yeah. He is stuck with me. I think we celebrated 42 years, this last, yeah. Well, like Dennis said, and a lot of us, we married those people that stay with us through all the crap that we put him through. But anyway, so he was born and raised in Central Washington, and his plan, he'd been in the Marine Corps for five and a half years, and he was going to go back and farm. And as we were talking in that first date, I'd never even met a farmer, even though he wasn't a farmer, but he might as well have been, because he was born and raised on one, and he wanted to go back and farm. And I was just like, oh, wow. And so I remember going home that night, and I went up. My best friend lived above me, and I knew she wanted to hear all about my first date. And I just went up and I said, well, he's really, really nice, but he wants to be a farmer, so nothing will ever come of it. And so here I am. I've lived in Whitman County for 41 years. Yeah. We came over here. He farmed for a little while when he got out of the Marine Corps. But he was one of nine, and talk about that situation where, you know, too many Indians and not enough chiefs. Well, that's probably not appropriate to say these days. Sorry. Anyway, You know the idea. Okay, you know the idea. Anyway, so he had always kind of wanted to become an ag teacher, to teach vocational agriculture and be an FFA advisor, which was he was in FFA all the years he was growing up, and so that's what he wanted to do. So he went. He had joined the Marine Corps right out of high school, and so went to college. Went to 2 years at junior college in Yakima, and then we moved to Pullman for him to get his last 2 years done and get his degree to become an ag teacher. So that's what brought us to Pullman, to Eastern Washington. And that was, like I said, in 1984. So our dates, we would split a bottle of wine and, you know, think nothing of it. And at that time, that was enough. And, you know, going through the big book, one of the greatest joys of my life, really the last 5 years has been getting into this beautiful book that is not the treasure, it's the treasure map, and getting to go through it in the summer of 2020. Now, Tanya Carroll isn't here, is she? Oh, okay. Well, she, through the Sisters in Sobriety link there, said, oh, there's this guy named Dennis from Texas, and he's doing this big book study, and so you gotta check it out. And that was the summer, you know, 2020, and I was just starting to, start going to other meetings, and so I just was like, wow, this is awesome to be going through it, you know, line by line. What in the world does that have to do with splitting a bottle of wine on my date? Oh, I know, the moderation thing. Well, you know how it describes the different types of alcoholics? And I was always, you know, like before we really broke it down, I could see myself, you know, but now it's like, oh, I was each one of those until I became a real alcoholic, because I didn't, and I know some of you from the get-go, you know, it was like, psh, you were, you know, and some of you say you were born an alcoholic. I don't know. I don't care. But all I know, even if I was born one, I didn't drink like an alcoholic to begin with. And so anyway, but as, you know, through the years, and because, too, my family for, you know, holidays and birthdays and, you know, any occasion, there was always booze. And that was just part of it. It was part of having a good time and celebrating. And so anyway, that summer we moved here, and I got pregnant, and we had gotten married, and then I didn't just get myself pregnant. And we had three children, and we just were thrilled, because we both had pictured, you know, wanting to have children, and just couldn't wait to be parents. And yeah, I was just so happy to have my kids and our kids and raise them together, and in the community, since I didn't know what it was like to be born and raised in the same town and live there all your life. That's how he was raised. You know, he went to kindergarten with the kids that he graduated with, and that was foreign to me. And yet, I'm so grateful that our kids were raised like that. And just because of that sense of home, and they love our community. They've loved living there and going to school there and so on. But anyway, about, because I in thinking about it, doing inventory and that sort of thing, I think it was around when I was 35-ish. So my kids were getting a little older, but still, you know, still there and in the house. But I just started drinking more, and really the kind of a turning point for me was when, because it used to be just wine and beer, and we never had hard alcohol in the house, and when I would, well, it doesn't matter how it happened, I discovered, liquor is quicker, it was like the whole, I don't know, well, I started drinking more, and it just, the time that it took from when, going like, okay, I'll buy a bottle, and I always bought the bottle, my husband never did, but I would buy a bottle, and then I would make the nightcap, and not for both of us, but probably after, I mean, not very long, I was making his with the one shot and then the rest, you know, pop. And not long before, I was like double, triple, and way more than, you know, than he was. But anyway, that became, you know, it was a week, weekend once in a while, then it was every weekend, and then the weekend starting earlier and going longer. And then pretty soon it was every day. And a beautiful woman that I love listening to put it, and I'm sure you guys have heard it before too, but she put it so, so beautifully. I mean, in a way that I could relate is, I probably wouldn't even say it the way she did, but the chains of alcoholism were so soft until they were too tight to be broken, something like that. But like, you know, everything was so good, and this is great, and I love the way it made me feel. And I would only drink at night after the kids went to bed. That's how it started. And so it was like, who am I hurting? And, you know, he's having a drink, I'm having a drink. Well, he'd have his drink and then go to sleep. And I would be in bed next to him with my light on, and I would always read. And that was my deal, is I'd have my drink, he'd go to sleep, I'd go make him another drink. And I would read. Well, I should have had a sign that something was not quite right, because if I'd be in a really good book, then the next afternoon or something, I'd, oh yeah, I'm reading that good book, and pick it up, and I'd see my bookmark, and I'd, you know, get the bookmark, and I'd start reading. I'm like, I don't remember that. And I'd go back, and I'm looking, I'm like, I don't remember that. And pretty soon it was like, dang, I read like 20 pages and I don't remember anything. And it's like, yeah, what in the world? But that was just my thing. And like I said, I just felt, and I would say, I'm not hurting anyone. Well, as I started drinking more, and one thing is that I hated with a passion to go into liquor stores. It was, at that time, you couldn't buy liquor in a Safeway or something. You had to go to a state liquor store. And I was just like, oh gosh, I don't want anybody to see me. And the bottom line is, I was living a double life. And like I said, I wasn't going to a church, or any of my friends or anything would be like, oh, you know, what do you drink, or, you know, you're in the liquor store. They wouldn't have thought anything, but the amount that I was starting to drink, and then as it progressed so quickly, so I would come up to Spokane, because I bought it for a while in Colfax, which is a tiny little liquor store, but then she would be like, she'd look at me when I come in, I think, oh yeah, I was just here 2 weeks ago. Oh, that's right. So then, yeah, so I know where every liquor store is in Spokane. And even those ones I wouldn't go to twice in a row. Okay, so I got to go to, you know. So I was so obsessed with the idea that that someone might get even an inkling of the amount that I was drinking. And because of this, you know, double life and living, you know, with this facade, it would actually go through my mind, I've got to go really quick. Now, at this time, about the last 5 years of my drinking, I would go in and I, exactly where I was, I knew where I was going, and I would get a case of black velvet. That was my thing. And somebody once said something about, oh, is that whiskey? And literally, I wanted to say, well, no, it's not whiskey. Because it's like cowboys in the, you know, and Marines drink whiskey, not church ladies. You know, I drink black velvet. So anyway, I go in, get my case of the big bottles, the big, huge ones. And I always remember I loved Christmas time because they would come in boxes that looked like a gift. And so I'd go in and be like, yeah, I gotta get these Christmas gifts out of the way. It's like, and I would buy the six bottles that I was going to drink in those boxes. Anyway, but again, being consumed with the idea of yeah, heaven forbid that you would know that I would be doing this. And so, okay, I'm spending way too much time on all that. So the more I tried to control it, the harder I tried to control it, the more it spiraled out of control. Because when I started, you know, the consequences of basically drinking all night and then sleeping all day. And I can remember getting up, I don't know, one or two, because I'd be just, you know, hated to get up because I'd been up all night drinking. And I can remember scurrying around and, okay, I'm gonna throw a load of wash in. And, okay, and then our three children were all super involved in everything at school. That's how it is in these small towns. You know, you're on every, you do every sport and every play, every, you know, whatever. So, and I took pride in the fact that I didn't miss anything. I was at everything that they, you know, they were involved in. And, and all that did was help me keep rationalizing that, you know, I'm fine, everything's fine here, I'm a great mom, and everything that I would volunteer to do, I'd go overboard on it because of this, like, compensation, you know, trying to. Well, when my youngest son, you know, DARE, the program DARE, the DARE program. When my youngest son, he came home one day and he had this DARE certificate. And I looked at that and I said, was that today? And he said, yeah, yeah. And I just was mortified that I had spaced that. And of course, I was sleeping at home. And I just said, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. And he said, it's okay, Mom. It's okay. It's all right. But I just was like, wow, I can't believe I missed that. And, excuse me, I didn't miss a lot more. Well, I didn't miss anything else, really. But it just, like I said, the craziness inside me was just reaching, I just was getting to that point because I was living this double life And I hated myself so much, and the shame, and this whole the whole ritual. And you know, one thing, one of the first things I wrote in my big book is this quote from Dr. Bob. It's from page 181, and it was such a hopeful thing for me when I heard it, so I wrote it down. If you really and truly want to quit drinking, we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink. The effort that I had to put into my drinking, that level of drinking, and because of where we lived out in, you know, outside of Endicott, and you know, the fact that, yeah, I didn't have a 7-Eleven, you know, 2 minutes away. It was always, I had to plan all these things, and also, you know, I would be going to Spokane, get in the car, drive an hour and a half to Spokane, only to get my booze. And, you know, it would have to be by myself because, you know, I would never do it with one of my kids in the car. But that whole cycle, and then getting it home, hiding it, then getting rid of the bottles. And at that time, they were plastic. I don't know if they were glass when I first started drinking. But anyway, had this whole ritual where we had a burn barrel. I know, terrible for the environment. But I had a burn barrel. We lived in the country. And so this big ritual is when I'd get a new box of six, then I'd have, because I would have stuck the empty ones in that same, you know, the other box, take it out, put it in the burn barrel, and then I'd light the fire, and I'd be, like, looking around for farmers that might be, like, I don't want anybody to see what I'm doing, a big box of black velvet. Anyway, burn it. But the whole effort of all that, the hiding, and not let alone spending the money, I was robbing Peter to pay Paul, and, of course, As my drinking progressed, that that case lasted less and less and less of time. Because even with my husband having his one shot, and some nights he'd be like, "No, I don't. Yeah, no. Okay, more for me." But that wasn't lasting very long. So, you know, more frequent trips. So I realized then that I was slowly killing myself. I never thought about actually, you know, the act of suicide of, you know, any of the ways, but I knew that I was killing myself. And how much time do I have? What? Oh my gosh, see, I've spent way too much time talking about how it was, how I was. Okay, so got to that point where I was at that jumping off point where I couldn't go on like it was, but I couldn't not. I couldn't imagine, and the thought terrified me of going a day without drinking, because by then, it had been every day. And I had tried so many, you know, countless times. And the thing is, because I knew God, I loved God, I was like, but when I would pray, and in my heart of hearts, I just wanted to drink like a normal person again. Because since there was a point in my life where, you know, I could think, well, yeah, that was normal. I wasn't, you know, it was once in a while, and I wasn't obsessed with it. And so when I would pray and ask God, it was just like, Just let me go back to that point. And but never just like, whatever we need to do, because I can't go on. Well, I got to that point, and it was May 21st, 2005. That was the day of the Lilac Parade. I gotta speed it up. My daughter was the junior miss for St. John Endicott. So she was going to be in the parade. My husband was driving the whatever. And that day, we came up, And I didn't have any alcohol at home. So I knew he was going to be getting in line. You got to get in line way before. And he was going to be busy with that. So I'd go get my booze. And then I was like, how am I going to, I got to hide it and, you know, put it in the car and bury it and so on. Well, for some reason, I was going to pay with a debit card, and then that debit card wouldn't work, and then that credit card wouldn't work. And I was just like going from like, okay, so, because I couldn't remember the PIN number. And just this, but this whole nagging of feeling, because it had been growing for so long, that you are out of your mind. You are out of your mind, and this is so out of control. And so anyway, I was at the end of a bottle. I had brought it that night, put it in our suitcase, and my husband and I were staying in one room. My daughter and her friends that were in the going to be on the float were in the next room. And I knew that, you know, I wasn't going to have enough to really, because like, having one drink, you know, it's not even, it's more pain than it's worth, right? So, but anyway, poured us a drink, and it was just, it had long since stopped doing what it used to do. It was just like, because I would, you know, I was drinking so much that just a couple swallows and I'd pretty much be out of it. And so that night, because I couldn't drink how I, you know, it says that we want to, the great obsession of every alcoholic is to someday somehow be able to control and enjoy his drinking. And if I was controlling it, then I wasn't enjoying it. And if I was enjoying it, there was no control. And so anyway, that night, I had that one drink. And some people say, you know, don't ever forget your last drunk. Well, I can't tell you the last, I mean, I guess it would be the night before when I, you know, drank to oblivion, but I don't remember anything about it because I wasn't remembering. It was just, you know, I was passing out or blacking out. And so anyway, I told my husband that morning, because I didn't even sleep, I don't think. And I just said, because I'd been thinking about it, praying about it, I was like, okay, bottom line is, I got to do something that I've never done before. I've got to do something different. And to me, the thought of Alcoholics Anonymous was like, well, that's the lowest you can go. But I guess I got to go. I guess I got to try. And I told him, and I thought maybe, I remember thinking he'd say, oh, no, you don't need to do that. And he goes, okay, okay. So that was Saturday night, and on Sunday, we had all these family things going on. My dad's birthday, and family was up, and we went out to dinner. And normally, of course, I would have had something to drink at the restaurant. And then that night, I didn't have hard alcohol at home, but I would have stopped at the store and gotten some wine or beer, at least something, you know, to get me through that night. But it was like, no, I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I couldn't go that day, but I thought, okay, Monday morning, I'm going to call. And I phone book, because we didn't have the internet then. And I looked up that line, the Spokane hotline, and called. And thank God I did. I made it. I went to a meeting that night, Monday night. Maybe some of you were there. It was at the Manitou Methodist Church there on Grand and 33rd. And it was in the basement. And I walked in. I know this will surprise my friends, but a little bit late. And I walked in, and really, I was just absolutely terrified. Because the idea that, oh my gosh, so I'm not gonna drink for a while. This is terrible. And but also just kind of like, I think the world is just gonna stop if I say that I'm an alcoholic. So anyway, I just sat there petrified, didn't say a word when they asked for newcomers. I didn't even hardly breathe because I didn't want anybody to look at me or... Anyway, so I got to the end of the meeting, and it was a huge meeting. Oh, 5 minutes, okay. Or am I done? Okay. So after the meeting, I went up to the chairperson and just said, this is my first meeting. What do you do? And she said, well, when was your last drink? And just like that. And I said, well, what's today? And she said, it's Monday. I said, okay, Monday. I said, Saturday night. And she said, okay, well, you got to make a meeting every day. 90 meetings in 90 days. And I said, well, I live an hour and a half from here, and I'm not going to be able to do that. And she said, well, then... You know, you got to be willing. You got to do what you got to do, and you're probably not going to make it. And just kind of like, and so being a typical alcoholic, I thought, well, I'll show you. No, it was like I have family obligations and blah blah blah. So anyway, the next meeting that I went to that I could make was that Friday night. That was a Monday night. And that Friday night, I went to a meeting just down the way from there, and it was a Friday meeting. And their tradition, or their custom was to give newcomers a book, and this is the book they gave me, and I thought they must think I'm going to read it, so. Then it took me a month. Wrap this up. It took me a month of going to meetings. I drive to Spokane and go to different meetings. And one of the first meetings, I started going to the Wednesday night women's meeting in that same church upstairs. They gave me this. And I used it. And after a month, on a Wednesday night, I heard a woman share, and she shared something about her daughter and the shame that she felt as an alcoholic mom, and yet now she wasn't drinking. And just what the miracle had happened. And I had known from the beginning that I needed to get a sponsor, but I didn't know until that minute that there she is. I'm going to ask her. And so that was June of 2005. And she took me through the steps to begin with. She came down to my house, drove an hour and a half to listen to my fifth step. But the most beautiful thing was, is that she, from that night, I think it was that night we went out after the meeting and talked. And that was the first time that I was talking one-on-one to another alcoholic. And she just listened to me and she shared. And it was like, there's hope, and that someone else cares. Someone cares if I stay sober. And anyway, I didn't even get to the online meetings, but it doesn't matter. Being of service, sponsoring, I have a God brought a woman, I was at a 24-hour international meeting summer. Anyway, January 5th, 2021, she asked me to be her sponsor. She lives in London, and she was a morning person and I was a night owl, so it worked out good because she would call me first thing in the morning and I was still up. So we've talked almost every day since. And she has, I think, 4 or 5 sponsees. And we've gone through, I don't know, 4 or 5 books together, of course, including the big book first and foremost. But the joys of sponsoring, but also the joys of every kind of service that I'm involved in. It is the lifeblood of this program, and I just always think that it's so great how God planned this whole thing out, is that in giving, we get to not only keep it, but we get to grow, because the whole thing is growing and learning every day, and I just want to be teachable every single day. So thank you so much. I'm sorry I went over.